Welcome to another episode of NHL Executive Suite. So pleased to have the general manager of the Nashville Predators with us and longtime executive David Poile. I'm Deb Placey. The winningest general manager, actually, we have in the history of the National Hockey League. And you go far back enough that they weren't even keeping track of wins, right, when you first started?
Well, somebody was keeping track of wins. I think that's how you keep your job in this business. But yes, it's been a long time for sure that I've been a general manager. Very, very honored to have this job day one, and still very honored and appreciative of it 36 years later.
Now, there is a generation of hockey fans that don't know you as a player, that you started as a player. And you were a very good player, college hockey, a two-time MVP at Northeastern. 11 hat tricks in your college career, as I get a big smile, which I think is still a record there.
Yeah, they called it the Cy Young Award, so not too many assists. But no, I was very fortunate to come from a hockey family, with my dad being a player in the NHL, and hockey was 24 hours, 7 days a week, all the time. And because of his jobs, we went to different places, and we lived in San Francisco, and that's where I played my high school hockey, which was remarkable that I was actually able to play Division I hockey at Northeastern. But that turned out to be a great move, great 5 years there at Northeastern, and every once in a while I was able to score goals.
You were on the five-year plan there?
The five-year plan. Now, that's for the listeners. Now, that's normal. I want everybody to know that's normal. It was a five-year school. Yeah, it's a co-op school, Northeastern, where you go to school basically half the year, and then you get a job, sort of where your major is. So I worked in the financial district a little bit during my time in Boston, and stayed there all the summers. So that was a fantastic time in my life.
What type of player were you? What were your best attributes?
I was a goal scorer, period. I was not a great skater. They called me snowshoes, so I guess that gives you an indication right there. I mean, I just love the game of hockey, and guys like when I got to school, it was 1966, which is the first year that Bobby Orr came into the league, and Herb Rahlby was the PR director for the Boston Bruins, and he let in a lot of the college players in for free, sort of like through the back door.
Really?
And I got to watch for five straight years Bobby Orr, and then eventually they made the trade for Phil Esposito, and to me that was possibly the greatest time in my life in terms of watching hockey. So I got to go to college, I got to play college hockey, and then I got my introduction into the National Hockey League by watching the Boston Bruins when they had been a team that wasn't very good, hadn't made the playoffs, and then they got Bobby Orr, and things changed, the game started to change, and like I say, I already had the DNA in terms of the hockey in my blood. But that was the first hockey game I ever saw, was the Bruins opener, Bobby Orr's first game, and Gordie Howe actually played for Detroit in that game. So again, it was a great education in terms of Northeastern, and a great education for what eventually was going to happen in my career.
Absolutely. Did you tell Bobby Orr that was the first game you'd ever gone to?
I've known Bobby a fair bit. I don't know if I've ever told him that, but in terms of...
Tell him you didn't pay to get in.
I didn't tell him to pay to get in either, but it was just, like I say, just a fantastic time in hockey, and then for my life as in terms of where I was going. Maybe I didn't know it at that time. Well, what I thought for sure, I was going to be a player. We all think we're going to be a player, and then that didn't happen. So the good news is I was, I guess, subliminally getting organized, getting prepared for what the next step was going to be.
When you didn't end up playing, you went to British Columbia, right, and took a job to be an executive. We could have done a podcast then in the mm-hmm. executive suite in the telephone business, right? For a few months until you got the Atlanta job. And then the story goes that you drove your 1967 Chevy to Atlanta. Is that right?
Boy, you've got it all. Yellow bird.
It was yellow.
Yeah. So what happened is I got graduated in June, got married in July, went to the Canucks training camp in September, got into October by going to Seattle. Then they sent me to Fort Wayne, which I ended up didn't go. I thought, I got a college education, I better go in a different direction. My wife and I were living in Vancouver, and I signed up for the BC Telephone Company's executive training program. And what they do is I don't know how long the period is, like a month, they put you in this tool and die factory, sort of just to show you the foundation of their company and with all the workers and what have you. So I'm all gung-ho on that job. So it's that 8-to-5 job. So I get there at early. I want to be impressive. Well, in a union situation, there's a gate, and the doors don't open to 8 o'clock. So that was I wasn't sure that was perfect for me. And then at 10 o'clock, the bell would ring, and you have to have your coffee break. And at noon, the bell would ring, and you have to have your you know, et cetera, et cetera. 5 o'clock, you'd be able to just put down whatever you're doing. So it was really different being on the management side through my dad all my young life. And then on Friday, all the workers were coming in late in the day, and they were like, they're checking out these chainsaws and all these different things. And I'm asking the fellow that I'm working with, I said, why are they, this is Friday, why is everybody doing this? He says, oh, they're working on their homes on the weekend. So that was it. And then it was around December that Cliff Fletcher was coming to, they'd just been awarded the franchise in Atlanta, and Cliff Fletcher was coming on a scouting mission to Vancouver. And again, the hockey world is pretty small. And during school at Northeastern, I would go to drafts with my dad up in Montreal, and I got to meet a lot of different hockey people, and I got to meet Cliff just casually or what have you. And again, timing is everything, and he was looking for a young person to kind of help out. Bill Putnam was the president of the team. Bill Putnam was the former president of the Philadelphia Flyers that my dad worked for, and they were just, you know, the offices and the staff were very small in those days, and so they were looking for an administrative assistant. And again, I had a great hockey background, and then I had a college degree, and that was kind of that was very good for that time. And so they just, Cliff interviewed me. I went to a game with him, and he interviewed me, and I talked to Bill on the phone, and they just said, look, come on down, we'll just hire you as an administrative assistant. We don't know, you're going to work for me, Bill said. Cliff said, oh, you'll work for me, we'll just figure it out. So my wife and I got into the 67 Chevy Biscayne, yellow by the way, and drove all the way from Vancouver down to Atlanta, and we opened up the office. And it was a trailer somewhat close to the Omni that was being built at the time, and there was a huge billboard right above the trailer, a red goaltender that says, the Ice Age cometh to Atlanta, get your tickets before the freeze, and the arrow pointed down there. So I'm 20, I guess 21 years of age at that time, and opened the office. So my first official job was to run the Name the Team contest. And so, you know, that was fun and funny, a lot of things. And our whole staff was Bill Putnam, his secretary, PR person, myself, and Cliff. And Cliff wasn't there very much because he was scouting. So you can just imagine how, you know, with that small of an operation, how much you get to do and how many touches you get to make on different things. So it's just in a couple of months there, we had hired scouts, and we only had like 4 or 5 months hockey left to prepare. I set up a scouting system, which had never been ever done, I think, before in the NHL, just very simple in terms of scouts sending in reports and me just basically almost scotch taping things on manila folders or what have you, so we'd have records of the players and, you know, things like that. It seems like that's not very much, but in those days, they didn't have anything. And then it got near the end of the year, and we were just swamped. And Cliff said, well, here, we got to have some coverage of some of these minor leagues and what have you. So he sent me into the old Eastern League for a few games. And I made a couple of recommendations of players, which we ended up signing. One of them played in the NHL for a while, Eddie Kia. Another one had his jersey retired by the Maine Mariners, Wayne Schaub. And I recommended Fred Creighton as a coach who coached in our farm club and ended up being an NHL coach both for the Flames and then for the Boston Bruins. So when that happened, Cliff pulled me away from Bill and the business side, and I became his administrative assistant and eventually his assistant manager.
Well, it just goes to show you have to be willing to get your hands dirty and get in and be willing to start anywhere, the mailroom, the ticket selling side, anything just to get started.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, you know, part of, I say, if I have a philosophy, it's just that I'm very appreciative to always have my job and in hockey, and I try not to ever take it for granted. And, you know, you sort of little things like, you know, again, I like to think that I work as hard as anybody, so I don't want to get outworked. And when people call me, I want to get back to them, you know, right away. I mean, I think it's a respectful thing to do or what have you. Just, you know, a few basic things to make sure that I'm being honest with myself and doing a really good job. But, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, when I started, I mean, it didn't matter what the task was. I was open to doing it. It was fun. I mean, it was just interesting and new things. Everything was like, you know, brand new. And that was, again, another fantastic, you know, part of my life. 8 years there in Atlanta, all the things that happened there, on ice, off ice, trying to sell hockey in a non-traditional market. Again, it all comes back later and eventually from Washington to Nashville, starting in a non-traditional market. Going back to my dad, GM of two expansion teams, Philadelphia and then Vancouver. So a lot of similarities in our background.
Let's talk about your organization. You started with the scouting, but now it's to such a different level in all your years. When Ray Shero actually first came to the Devils, his suite where he'd watch the game was right next to our broadcast position. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I noticed about him right away as soon as the game started is he had this legal pad and he wrote the entire game. You're laughing. And I was guessing when I started talking to folks about you that he got that from you. Your notepad or your notebook has become sort of, I guess, very well known in your inner circles. Tell us about the notepads and the notebooks.
Well, we all have our systems of what we do on a daily basis, weekly basis, I guess. And it's just I just have a sheet for the day with the people that I need to talk to, which is like four or five people in my organization. That's there every day. And then some of the things I might have to do league-wise and then some things I might have to do with my organization. And I keep a little space here for the crisis of the day because I don't know what it's going to be or when it's going to be, but I know it's going to be there. So it's just being organized. I like to think, if you talk about qualities, that I think I'm very organized. I'm a planner. That's what my daughter always says, the Poils are planners. And I truly believe that that's one of the reasons why, when you feel prepared, I think you get some confidence from that. So, before I go to bed at night, I got my whole day planned for tomorrow.
In terms of you getting back to people, that's a compliment. And I've heard that from people about you, that you do get right back to them. And we can talk about in terms of your negotiating style or agents or players as well. But other general managers have said that about you, but that even as many big trades as you've pulled off, that you take your time with them. And even if you get back to them, you may not have an answer, but you will get back to them. And I think it was Rick Dudley who said, I want to get this right, I'm not sure if it was Sidney Crosby, but they said, even if I called David and offered him Sidney Crosby straight up, he would say, let me get back to you.
I wouldn't agree with that. I'm pretty sure I could do that. I think, again, in GM's world, I guess from the outside, people think that the only time I would talk to a GM is about a trade. But, I mean, we have a very big and complicated business, and we have a lot of things that we go through on a daily basis. I mean, it could be, you might have difficulty managing your owner. You might have, problem with an agent. You might have, problem with your star players. It could be any number of things. It could be, getting together to do something social with somebody, just to shoot the breeze or just to talk the game, or where do you think we're going? What should we change? Should we change the equipment? Are you happy with how the game's been played? Are the rule changes correct? If you could change something in the CBA, what would you change? I think a lot of that, and that becomes into your relationships or what have you. The deal part is very important. I get that, but it's not the most important thing. I think your relationships, because it gives you ideas of how you want to run your organization. I mean, we're always, in my mind, I'm always learning, and I guess you could say in some ways stealing from other people. They've tried something. I mean, mentorships are huge. I've had two very important mentors in my life. My dad, of course, from being my father, and all the knowledge that he had in hockey as a player and as a coach and as a manager, and then Cliff Fletcher, who is the one that hired me, and I worked for Cliff for 8 years, and I mean, I wouldn't trade those two mentorships for any college education.
While we're here, I want to mention we're doing the podcast near the Hockey Hall of Fame. Do you go visit your dad's plaque? Do you like to go by and see it when you're here?
I saw it last night. I was at the Hockey Hall of Fame last night, and I got to see that. They have a replica of this plaque which you have hanging there, and I have that in my office, and I'll always have that in any office that I'm ever going to have, whether it's eventually at home or what have you. So yeah, I'm very proud of my dad. And he played in the NHL when he was 18 years old. I mean, he was from Fort William, Ontario, which is now called Thunder Bay. Played on a line called the Flying Forts. Three young kids, and then his career was actually very short. It got interrupted by going to World War II, of all things. So he had to go to the war, and I actually have this letter from he wrote to Conn Smythe, who was the general manager, saying that, he's over here in the war and, things are going okay and et cetera, et cetera. And he says, is there any chance that Margaret, that's my mom, his wife, could get a ticket to a game in Toronto? And this is a letter. I could show you the letter. And so Conn Smythe writes back to him and calls him buddy or something like that. He says, I just, I hear that Hitler is a you know, tough character or what have you. Watch out for yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And then he says, just want you to know that the competition is really tough here. Your job is not guaranteed when you get back. Can you imagine that? This is World War II. In World War II, my dad's asking for a ticket for my mom to go to the game, and Conn Smythe is saying, be careful, you may be losing your job.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, again, I hope the compassion that manager have today is a little different.
Oh, my gosh. And he did come back, right, and he won a Stanley Cup with Toronto.
Yeah, I think it was 47, 48, I think, yeah.
After he fought in the war. That's amazing. Yeah. It is a different world. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the trades, because that takes us to Washington and your first job as a GM, and you made, I guess, what was considered at the time a blockbuster, what, a week into your job, your new job with the Capitals?
Yeah, that was unbelievable. I got interviewed early in the summer. I was in Calgary as Cliff Fletcher's assistant with the Flames. I got interviewed early in the summer by Abe Pollin and then Dick Patrick, who was soon to be named the president of the Caps. They were in desperate times. They 8 straight years out making the playoffs. They had this big campaign called Save the Caps campaign where they had to sell so many tickets or do so many things, and they weren't even sure whether they were going to even play anymore. So I hadn't heard from them at all, and so I don't know why, just curiosity got to me, because I thought it was a good interview. I thought I was a serious candidate, and I just, out of the blue, like the last week of August, I just picked up the phone and called Dick Patrick, and I said, and I haven't heard from you guys, anything going on? He says, I was just going to call you. I'm thinking, really? So, and he says, yeah, we'd like to offer you the job. And I mean, I'm the one who made the call. And so this is like right now, right at the end of August. I said, okay. He says, well, can you come in? I said, well, look, training camp is starting like at September 10th, and I'll be there at the end of August. I said, I'm going to come with 2 suitcases. Like, I'm never going back to Calgary. If you're going to offer me the job, then we're going to work this out. I'm not coming back. And so that's exactly what I did. I left my wife in Calgary with 2 kids and diapers. Sorry about that, honey. Dick picked me up at the airport, had dinner with Mr. Pollin, and then, we didn't have dinner with Mr. Pollin. He says, we'll meet Mr. Pollin tomorrow. This is on a Friday. This is Labor Day weekend on Friday. And so he comes into the, I go into his office, and we have this, talk back and forth, and basically he says, okay, well, I'm going to offer you the contract. So he offers me a contract. He offers me a 1-year contract for less money than I was making as assistant GM in Calgary, and I had a sort of a notebook with all my notes, and I kind of folded up, and I said, well, I said, I'm flattered, and this is my dream to become an NHL general manager, but that's not fair. And anyway, long story short, he offers me a 3-year deal. We finally work it out. So that leads into what your question was. So this is like, so it's at September 4th or 5th. On September 10th, there is a Board of Governors meeting in Toronto at the Royal York Hotel, and nobody's going for Washington. And so I put up my hand and says, well, I will go. I'm thinking, this is a power position. I mean, this is great. So I walk in. I'm 33 years old. I'm, again, petrified. All these more senior people, et cetera, et cetera. Walk in. I don't know where to sit. I sit down right next to Irving Grundman, who is the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. We start talking about different things or what have you, and by the time the meeting is over, I've made a trade with the Montreal Canadiens for Rod Langway, Brian Engblom, Doug Jarvis, and Craig Laughlin, for Rick Green and Ryan Walter. So again, in those days, I couldn't get home then. There's no cell phones, so I go up to my room in the Royal York. The window's open. There was no air conditioning. It was still warm in September. And I call Mr. Pollin. I said, I've made a trade. He said, okay, well, what did you do? And I said, I've traded Ryan Walter. And that's all I got out of my mouth, because he said, you did what? Because that was his favorite player.
Of course it was, right?
Yeah, you did what? So there's a big pause. And I said, I traded Ryan Walter. And I went through the whole, Rick Green, gave him the whole trade. And he says, I hope you know what you're doing. And he hung up. So I've had the job for less than 10 days, and I've made a trade, and the owners hung up on me. So I stick my head out of the window at the Royal York. It's like 16 floors down there, and I just yelled out to everybody, like, I hope you know what you're doing. And to this day, every trade I make, I say the same thing to myself. I don't yell it out any loud anymore, but that was the start.
Well, you did know what you're doing. Rod Langway, right, went on to have a great career, as did all those guys. And It actually reminded me of that when you made the P.K. Subban Shea Weber trade. They probably have a lot of similarities, right? Shea Weber probably wasn't the only name that your owner knew, but he was obviously the face of the franchise in Nashville. Were there some similarities for you when you made that trade?
Yeah, I for sure. I mean, Shea was the face of our franchise at the time, and our captain, and a lot of things. And we were kind of, you know, just in a place. I mean, I guess this is my job. I mean, you have to make the tough calls at the time. I mean, I guess you could give 100 reasons why I didn't have to make the trade or we didn't have to make the trade. And believe me, you'd like to say, well, this was a unanimous, you know, decision. And I mean, the reality was it wasn't a unanimous decision. But, you know, I felt that our franchise needed a little bit of a shot in the arm. And PK certainly was not only a good player, but he was great media. And I also, you know, felt, and it's, again, nothing ever against Shea, but the fact that you're getting a player that I think was comparable, at least in my mind he was comparable, and you're getting a player that's 3 to 4 years younger, you know, it felt like there was a reason to do that. And there's a lot more things than that that went into it. But, again, you make those kind of trades, and it's like it is that kind of moment. Like, I hope you know what you're doing, because, you know, that trade could have gone either way. And I think it'll be, you know, a trade that's going to be talked about for years and years.
Absolutely. So fast forward after 20 or 30 years, you're in the Stanley Cup final, but really Nashville is just so turned on to hockey. Let's talk a little bit about Nashville. How different is it today than it was when you first got there?
Well, you come to the non-traditional market, and, you know, people were just, you know, they're certainly willing to give you a try. I love Nashville from the first week I was there. The people were so inviting. The city seemed to be just kind of refreshing, just, you know, different from where I had been. And everybody was upbeat, and weather was good. There was nothing to complain about. The first year, you know, just scouting expansion and, you know, building up interest, lots of speaking engagements and things like that. We had like Pete Weber and Terry Crisp that were on board for us, and they did a fantastic job. And we're kind of off and running, but you know, we're an expansion team, so you kind of know what the level you're at. And again, I think we carved out a real good game plan for our ownership as to what could take place. And after 4 or 5 years, I think we were right there. I mean, we're tracking correctly. I think we had the third best record in the league. And unfortunately, Craig Leopold wanted to go in a different direction with our team. We hadn't had any playoff success, but I felt we were on the cusp of that. And because of his decision to want to sell the team, you know, he had to find a buyer. But in the interim, his orders to me were to just have your payroll very, very low. And what we had to do there is had to trade Thomas Vokoun, who was our number one goalie, Kimmo Tiimonen, who was a fantastic player, Scott Hartnell. We didn't rebid on Paul Kariya, Peter Forsberg. I could go on and on. So it was just from a hockey ops standpoint, it was a disaster. And it was a very negative for our fans and for our sponsors and people that wanted to support us. And so, you know, for a couple of years there, we were just in a tough place. We changed ownership, you know, two times. But then when Tom Sigran and Herb Fritsch came in, I think it's 8 years ago now, they kind of stabilized things. And, you know, we haven't lost any players. We in the early years, we lost a lot of good players. Like Dan Hamhuis would be another one because of, you know, financial restrictions or what have you. And I think the Shea Weber thing, in some regards, when he signed the offer sheet with Philadelphia, I think that was a wake-up call right at the very top for ownership. And if this is going to be successful, we can't be letting this happen. And, you know, since that day, we've never lost a player that we wanted to lose. And the ownership is primarily local, and they've done a fantastic job. They made real good hirings. When they came in, they hired Jeff Kogan, then Sean Henry on the business side. And, you know, not only was our game presentation already good, it went to a higher level. And, you know, our team got better and better every year, and our support got better and better every year. And it just obviously took off in the last 3 or 4 years with success in the playoffs, and certainly highlighted by what happened 2 years ago when we got to the Stanley Cup final. So it's very proud of what's happened in Nashville. Very, very proud, and how it's how it's taken on, and hockey is as popular as anything. With you know, all due respect, I think we're as popular as the Titans, and I just say that in a NHL NFL comparison, that our games are just so exciting for our fans. And again, it's we're in a good place right now.
Talk about game presentation. So the anthem took on a life of its own, really, in the national anthems when you were in the Stanley Cup final and really in the playoffs for a couple of years. Did it start with Carrie Underwood? How did it start with then it becoming really a surprise who was going to... Were you ever in on the surprise? Did you always know who was going to
be? No, we didn't want to know. That was sort of the thing. We kind of have a little bit of bet downstairs, like who was going to be the anthem singer. But kudos to Carrie, because you know we went to her and she kind of recruited a lot of people to kind of get on the bandwagon. Obviously, she travels in those circles and it just got going. She got a couple of her friends and then one thing led to another. But one day we had there was Garth Brooks was walking around downstairs, and actually we've met him because he's come to functions. Hi, Garth, how are you doing? So I walk into the coach's room and I'm like, okay, I think Garth Brooks is going to do the anthem, tonight. And they say, really? You want to bet on that? Yeah, I'll bet you on that. Well, he doesn't sing the anthems. He won't do that.
Oh, I didn't know that he would.
But it was his wife, it was Trisha Yearwood, did the anthem that night. So
not exactly
that was
a step down.
I didn't think that was a consolation prize at all. I thought that was pretty good.
Who's your favorite that did it?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, go way back when we first started. Garth Brooks actually did it at that time. We had the Dixie Chicks at the time. I really do like Trisha Yearwood though as a singer. I like her a lot. So, but we got so much talent in Nashville. They're all good. They're all unique.
Faith Hill.
Yeah,
she's kind of pretty.
Tim McGraw.
Yeah,
it's all good.
Yeah. When you even look down, though, is it Broadway, the name of the main street there?
Mm-hmm, yep.
The bars and the restaurants on game nights especially. I mean, you get a lot of credit. The Predators get a lot of credit for even revitalizing that neighborhood and that area, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, before we got there, I guess downtown wasn't really the great place. It was actually kind of a place that you didn't want to hang out or et cetera, et cetera. But kudos to the people that had the foresight to see where the building should be located. In real estate, they always say, what are the three keys to real estate? Location, location, location. And we have the best location of any building in the league. It just sets up so well before the game, socially, for if you want to have a drink, you want to listen to music, you want to just go on our plaza to, dance a little bit or do something to Predator like or what have you. The in-game presentation, as you refer to, is second to none, so you have a lot of fun there. And the game's over, everybody just pours out into Broadway. You can do whatever you want. It's within a minute everywhere you go. That's why, in my mind, being a little prejudiced to when we had the All-Star game in 16, I thought that was the best All-Star game ever in the league. And again, it's not only the inside what happens, it's what's outside, and it just sets up so perfectly downtown for everybody just to walk. Like, you don't have to have a car or get a bus or what have you. So it just sets up for entertainment-wise. So I don't want to say win or lose, but it's hard to have a bad time if you're going to a Predators game.
All right, so you mentioned having food or drink. Reminds me, I wanted to bring up, you're a wine enthusiast, I heard. How did that start?
Just moving to Nashville, actually. It goes back. Started with Cliff Fletcher, actually. I don't think I ever had a glass of wine until I hung out with Cliff, and he was very, very good at his selection, so I learned to appreciate fine wines with many, many dinners with Cliff on the road or at their home or what have you. And then I got some friends in Nashville that we golf with, and they were all way, way ahead of me in wine enthusiasts, and we'd have dinners at their house in different places, so they got me into wine clubs and stuff like that. So I got lots of extra wine, so if you'd like to come over to my house, I got lots of extra wine. I got too much wine right now.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you like to have a glass of wine to unwind after a long day at work or after a game? When do you like to drink, or just at dinner? Or sometimes during the game if it's not going well?
just at dinner, mostly. I think it's more a social thing. I think it's just fun. To me, there's the wine kind of has that... what do you want to call it, that it or that sex appeal, if you can say. For example, Igor Larionov, I went to a wine tasting. He's got some wine, and it's like he's got a wine that he named Triple Overtime because he's scored a triple overtime goal. He's got some very good wine called Hat Trick. So when I serve that at my house or with other people, I'm the general manager of the Predators, and I'm serving Hat Trick wine. I think that works into the evening well. Jim Fox in L.A., has a wine called Patiné. It's a Pinot Noir. On the label, it's got little skating as if skating in the ice, and it's got the puck. It's a rubber label, which is the puck. And patiné in French means skating fast.
Oh, really?
So,
interesting.
So I think those are fun ways to start the night off.
Mario Lemieux has quite a collection, right? Is he the quintessential collection in the NHL? Does he have?
I would say that there's Mario Lemieux is he's a 10, and David Poile is probably a 2.
No. According to what wine? What do they call the Wine Spectator magazine?
Exactly.
In case anyone didn't know, you met your wife when you were how old?
13.
13. And when did you get married? You waited how long to get married?
Well, we went to high school together in California, and then I went off to college. And then after we got engaged in my last year of college, my parents came down to California because she was still there, and her parents had a big meeting and blah, 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 and they decided that this was not the time to get married. Wait till I graduated. So they called it off for a year, if you will. And then after college, we graduated in June and got married on July 4th. So that was her idea, and I've never forget our wedding date. It's perfect.
Exactly.
47 years later.
Amazing.
That's a personal record for me.
And when you're 13, you meet her. And I guess when you were 14, you told her when you grew up you were going to be a National Hockey League general manager, to which she said what?
I hope I would have said player first. But well, she had never been to a hockey game before. And my dad was a coach and general manager of the San Francisco Seals, which is in the Western Hockey League. So she didn't know anything about it. And I would think if she was here, that she didn't fall in love with the hockey. I think she fell in love with me. I hope that's the way the story goes. But having said that, she's seen like thousands of games now. So she knows a lot about hockey now.
Do you bounce things off her sometimes?
Absolutely. Yeah, like I said, it's not like the GM relationship as we talked about earlier in terms of that. But she's kind of... it looks out for me. I mean, there's nobody else that's really looking out for me other than her. So if I'm something that's bothering me or want to run something by, whether it's, you know, it's more personal or business-wise, I think she has a really good pulse on what I'm going through and, you know, the kind of the highs and lows that you have in this business. So she's got to, after all these years, she's really got to knows the temperature, whether I need a hug or maybe sometimes a kick in the pants.
Well, I know she was there for you, as the hockey community was and your family was when you had the accident with your eye. Let's go back to, I guess, almost 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
That fateful day, a morning skate in Minnesota where a puck out of nowhere caught you in the eye. How is it now?
Well, I lost sight of the eye, so it's not a problem. I have a prosthetic eye, and all the doctors did a fantastic job, so it's all in the past tense. I mean, you get used to, you know, different things I, you know, I didn't realize you would have to, but I've made those adjustments. I'll give you one example, like driving it's all in your depth perception. So I actually took a lesson to get readjusted, and so first day I drive to work and it's all good. I come back home, get in the garage, and I said, okay, that was good. So I get in my car. The car is sticking about 2 feet out of the garage because I didn't have the depth perception to get it all the way up to the wall. So it's the same thing as if you're reaching for a drink, you're reaching here. So just things that you have to get used to, like when I play golf and if I ever sink a putt and they're all happy for me and they throw the ball to me, well, there's no chance I'm gonna catch that. So, but it was, you know, it's really one of those unfortunate situations. But I guess, and I'm trying to hope this comes across correctly, is that when something like that happens, it's sort of like you readjust, and this is the pun, it's like you focus more on everything, not only your eyesight. I mean, you're more careful, and you have to be more careful and stuff, but also focus on other things and make, you know, just being with you here is easy. We're sitting across from each other and what have you. If I get into a crowded room, like, say, a cocktail party where people are moving all the time, it's sometimes quite awkward because you just don't pick up people, and again, you don't see it correctly. And then the funny part of all this is that the GM's meetings, we sit in alphabetical order, and I sit beside the biggest prankster in the whole NHL, and that's Mark Bergevin. And he's always poking me on one shoulder and run around, and he's either the best or worst, depending on what side you're on. So it's fine. You just have to make some adjustments, and I still play a little bit of golf. I wasn't good in golf before. I'm not good in golf now, so it's not like it's changed too much.
I did think one interesting thing was, though, you and Elizabeth, your wife, wanted to go back. Mm-hmm. Once you were all healed, you went back. What was that like?
Yeah, well, she really wanted to go there. The night that it happened is my son flew, and he was back in Nashville at the time. And then unbeknownst to me, my daughter, who was in California, she flew out. And, you know, when I came to after all these operations and what have you, I didn't know where I was. And there's my two kids standing right there, which is really very nice and very cool, as always is with them. But she really wanted to go back and sort of retrace the day and the steps. And I guess it was kind of a closure for me also. So we did it. She did it. And kind of crossed that off the list. It was the day that it happened, too. Like I was all psyched up to go to Sochi. That was because the Olympics were coming up. And I was the GM of the U.S. team. And I actually just finished meeting with Parisi and Ryan Suter on other team. And are you guys all ready? And blah, blah, blah. So just it was an unfortunate situation.
So your kids are grown and now you have grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that you have continued the tradition that your dad started with you, which was on game day to walk the halls. You did that with your dad, you did that with your son, and now your grandson or your mm-hmm. granddaughters. Tell mm-hmm. us about that tradition.
Best job I've ever had is being a grandparent. So the granddaughters that I have in California with our daughter Lauren are just great. The oldest one is now 9. She got her ears pierced this week, and I just felt like, she's not a baby anymore. And Brian and Valerie had a son, he just turned 3, Wyatt, last week, and he's just started to learn how to skate. He's just got his hockey equipment, and he knows all the Predators' chants and loves to go to all the games, and it's the best part of my life.
Does it keep you young?
Absolutely, just like this job does. I mean, the thing I always kid about with Elizabeth is that we're the only ones that get any older in this business. The players stay exactly the same age.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they, you know, we meet them when they're single, then they get a girlfriend, then they get married, and then they have kids. I mean, every year we're buying wedding gifts and birthday gifts or whatever. It's the same age all the time. So I'm the only one that gets older. It's the same age every year. But there's no question. What makes it so great is because it's a changing all the time. I mean, there's the players and the coaches that I dealt with, you know, 35 years ago and where we are today and how the game is played is way, way different. And again, you have to stay, you know, generational. I mean, I'm not playing Fortnite when I go to my hotel room or what have you, but you got to stay, you know, in touch with these guys. And I know with the young people that we have in our office and what have you, they're bringing new and different ideas or different ways of thinking. And I hope one of my strengths is to be, you know, open-minded, you know, to these new ways. Like, you know, analytics wasn't here 10 years ago. Now analytics is huge. I mean, a lot of things are different. So yeah, absolutely. I think I'm in a very lucky position that my job is not stagnant or at all. It's different every day.
Well, one thing that so many people say about you, whether it is agents or players, is that you're so nice. I mean, you've managed to stay and have staying power a really long time. Do you ever get mad? When's the last time, like, you lost your temper? You're so nice.
it's an emotional business. I mean, I wish I was better than I am. I mean, I'm not happy with myself all the time. I mean, you know, it's easy to when you win games and how your behavior is. It's, you know, how your behavior is when you're, you know, things aren't going your way or when you're losing. And it's still tell you to this day, if we win tonight, I sleep great. If we lose tonight, I don't sleep as well. It's seems like something that you would mature into to being better. But I mean, I'm trying to get better every day. I wish I wish I had better balance in my life. We're all trying to do that. I mean, hockey deprives you of lots of things with your family, and you know, I can't have that that back. And, you know, the hours, the days, I mean, I'm not regretting it. I'm just saying it's constant work to find the correct balance in your life to do the right thing, not only for your job or your team, but for your family and what you should be doing personally for yourself.
A couple of agents said about you, though, that you never let it get personal and that you are able, one thing that they complimented you on, really across the board, your ability to advance the cause of your team and the cause, you know, that you represent, the side you represent, without letting it get personal with the player while still respecting the player and the agent. How do you do that?
I just think that's the right way to be doing it. I mean, it is not personal. I mean, it, you know, it only gets personal if they make it that way. And, you know, sometimes they do make it that way. But that's we don't have to do that. It has nothing to do with it. I mean, the last contract we did was with Pecorine, and the whole premise was the money was the last thing, very important thing, by the way, and I still wanted it lower and he still wanted it higher, but that's not the point. The point was is that you have a chance and we have a chance, if we want to do this together, that you could play your whole career for the Nashville Predators, one team, if this is what you want. And so we have to get on the same page. So there's certain things in a negotiation that you have to find that common area, and it's not necessarily always the length of the contract or the dollars. And when you find that, usually you can have a good outcome for both sides.
Okay, one story before we wrap up. There's a good story. Well, when Ray tells it, he says it's a good story, that you sent him overseas to watch Pecorine warm up, and that's how you found him. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the goaltender there was a goalie for Minnesota. His name's escaping me at the moment. And Pekka was his backup. And so Ray went over there, and basically Jani Kekalainen, who was our scout there, said to Ray, "We got to get to the game early." And Ray says, "Why?" He says, "Well, this guy's not going to play. You're going to have to watch him in warm-up." So that's what Ray always says. Well, he had a heck of a warm-up, and we drafted him in the eighth round. We don't even have an eighth-round pick anymore. So good for Jani, good for Ray. Got to be good. You got to be lucky in this business. And we were franchise player. He's been the most impactful player in our history.
So the one thing that's left, the Stanley Cup, winning the Stanley Cup, do you have a bottle of wine saved to pour in the cup when you win it?
I have many, many bottles of wine saved for that day. That would be very nice. That would be the icing on the cake for my whole family, for everybody that's participated and for all the years of doing this. I would really like that. I mean, that would be really neat. I mean, really great for our franchise too, for Nashville.
Will you be okay if it doesn't happen, or you're sure it's going to happen?
Well, there's nothing for sure in this business. I've been trying long enough and it hasn't happened. But yeah, I think I'll be okay. I mean, it's certainly a little bit of an ego thing to want to do that. But it's also the competitiveness that we have, that we've always had to, when we're in this business, whether you be a player or a manager, you're here to win every night. So, I mean, that's where your juices get flowing and your emotions get going there. And again, it was when we were so close there 2 years ago, it was felt so great and so many different levels, players, fans, owners, family. It was just like bringing everybody together, and you see that with a cup. I mean, I can't believe how unifying the Stanley Cup is to and so many different levels. So, like, again, I could give you 100 reasons why it'd be great to win a cup in Nashville.
I'm sure you will.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this. It was great.
Thank you.
That was David Poile, President of Hockey Operations and General Manager of the Nashville Predators. And remember, you can subscribe and download our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Audioboom, or wherever you get your podcasts. So I'm Deb Placey. Until next time, in the NHL Executive Suite.